This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A year ago today, Dia Barakat, Yusar Abu Salah, and Rasan Abu Salah were shot and killed in their Chapel Hill apartment. After the shooting, people across the globe grieved with the victims' family and friends. As support poured in, questions arose about whether the shooter targeted the three Muslim Americans because of their religion. Today, family members are preserving the memory of Dia, Yusar, and Rasan with charity projects and campaigns to combat Islamophobia. Joining me now is Yusuf Abu Salah. He's Yusar and Rasan's brother. He spent the last year raising money in his siblings' honor. Welcome, Yusuf.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Also joining me is Faris Barakat. Faris is Dia's brother and has helped to start a nonprofit called Project Lighthouse to serve as a community center in his brother's name. Welcome, Faris. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Faris, obviously, this tragedy is personal for you, and at the same time, it instantly carried implications, important implications at the national and global level. How have you tried to come to terms with this and try to understand this over the past year?
First, I guess I want to reiterate that my family's position since day one was to not fight ignorance with ignorance and not to cause more of that. And even in fact, like, we were reached out to immediately after by either the Turkish president, Jordanian embassies, and we said, no, this is an American issue. This is an American problem. And again, we wanted to celebrate more of their lives than really even give thought to Craig Hicks or his actions in a sense of, I guess we'll get to that maybe come trial. Mm-hmm. But what was more important was Liat Nus and Razan and who they were in their life and what they taught us in their death.
And a lot of what they did was good work in their community. Faris, tell us the story behind Project Lighthouse.
It was about 4 months after the murders where I guess I was just reflecting on what it is I wanted to do. I spent some time with family and I knew that I wanted to work in something meaningful. Understanding the environment in which we're in and maybe the ability that I can kind of on a personal level approach strangers and have them open up to me or open up to them about what it means to be Muslim American and help them understand what it means to be Muslim American instead of having people speak on our behalf. Let Muslims reclaim that narrative. I worked on that in terms of coming up with more of a business idea of things. And my dad and my mom inherited a house. The house belonged to my brother as a rental property. And the idea was we wanted to continue that house in his legacy. You know, we considered a shelter for battered women. We did this and that. And we ended up coming up with the name The Lighthouse because Diyat in Arabic translates into meaning light. Mm. And instead of saying Diyat's house, we called it The Lighthouse. And, you know, it's such a great name, I thought. Mm. And then we wanted to focus the house particularly on the youth because my brother had tweeted, I have a dream that one day we'll have an organized and structured community and I'll be able to help the youth with their projects. My mom sent me the screenshot of that tweet and said, this is what the house is about.
So tell us what you imagine. I know it's you're working on the house now to remodel it and get it ready. What do you expect to the house to house?
We house an incubator program on the second floor. We house two other office spaces, organizational spaces focused on the youth. And downstairs and upstairs, there's a big room that's just shared space, running programs in which I think it's important for Muslims to feel like they can be Muslims outside of the mosque and at home. And I definitely want to help the local community. It's a historically black neighborhood, a block away from St. Augustine's College. And the idea is that maybe I'm at the intersection of Muslim Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter, too. And I want to explore that as much as I can. And I think, you know, living in each other's diversity would be a huge contribution both ways.
This idea of continuing the work that Dia started or imagined that he would be doing has, of course, important implications. You sort of want to honor that wish, but also it has religious implications. The idea of doing good works in the name of someone after they're gone mm-hmm. is important in Islam, is it not?
Yeah, there is this idea of a continuous charity in which, for example, if I were to, in my life, plant a tree, even if I were to pass and die, anybody who were to benefit from either looking at the tree and saying, oh, how wonderful that tree looks, or eating one of the fruits off the tree, because I planted it in my life, you can still kind of claim those good deeds in a sense. And the fact that this is the house that belonged to my brother, we said, okay, let's take this and anything that happens out of this house that is good can go back to him and can benefit us in the same process.
Youssef, you were studying in the Caribbean when you received the news. After the shooting, you decided to come closer to home. Tell us more about that decision.
So when I got the news a year ago, I flew home the next day, and I decided to take a leave of absence that semester and spend some time with my family to heal and grieve and grow. But I was also given the opportunity to reapply to the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. I interviewed there, and I began my studies there all over in August, but I'm truly grateful for the opportunity, and it's just been an amazing experience.
You ran a half marathon in place of your younger sister, Rasan. Tell us more about that experience and why it's important for you to carry this on.
Yeah, when everything happened in the immediate few days following, I was contacted by Razan's best friend. Her name is Yasmin. They were training for runs. They had ran a 5K and a 10K, and next on their list was a half marathon. They were training for the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Raleigh. They had bought their bibs and everything. They were getting ready for it. So when everything happened, Yasmin reached out to me, and she said, hey, let's run this half marathon. And at first, I thought it would probably be impossible, but I was optimistic. I said, you know what, let's do it. We'll try. And we spent 6 weeks training. We started a campaign called Run for ZZ. That was her nickname. And a bunch of people got on board, friends and supporters. My current roommate at the time didn't know I would be attending medical school with him. He trained with me and pushed me really hard. I had never ran long distance before, and I completed the half marathon in 2 hours flat, which I thought was pretty good for training for 5 or 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But really, it proved to me that I could sort of harness my negative emotion, and I could honor my siblings, and I could create something positive out of this, and that there's a lot of hope and optimism left.
I'm talking with Youssef Abu-Salah and Faris Barakat today on The State of Things. In the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of their sibling's death in the tragic shooting in Chapel Hill last year, you talked about channeling that, Youssef, and I want to talk with you and Faris about this feeling, the sense that Islamophobia was one way or another a part of this. How do you see that entry as part of this case, and how do you deal with it personally?
I think the negative rhetoric and sentiment towards Muslims had a lot to do with the crime itself. Diya lived at that condo for about a year and a half before Yusler moved in, him and his roommate, Imad. And they had run-ins with Mr. Hicks, but he never brandished a weapon at them until my sister Yusler moved in, who wore the headscarf, when the run-ins escalated. You know, it's very tragic and even absurd that Chapel Hill police unfortunately released to media that it appeared that the crime was due to a parking dispute, mm-hmm. although they later tried to recant the statement and talk about that we were investigating the hate, possible hate bias or motive. I think the media had already ran with it, but to insinuate that three wonderful, genuine, caring, loving individuals were in a parking dispute and were shot execution style, point blank range in the back of the head. And I'm sorry to be so graphic, but that's what I'm dealing with, and that's what my families are dealing with. And it was just very insulting to them and their legacy. But you know, I think the rhetoric definitely had something to do with it.
Fair.
But right. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, you mentioned how we were going to sort of carry on their legacy, and that's our main goal. Just as Faris was saying. We're trying to keep doing what they were doing, and they were doing a lot of charity. They lived for other people. They truly cared about other people. You know, Diya and Yusra were all about providing dental relief to refugees and the impoverished all over here, locally, abroad. Razan ran a project downtown. It was a project through UMR, the organization that all three of them helped start and worked with. But she basically biweekly she organized an event where they would feed the homeless people of downtown Raleigh. They would cook for them and package lunches for them and write them messages and just hang out with them. And this wasn't something that they did because they felt like they needed to do for like their resume or a checkbox or something. But I mean, they if you knew them, and I think most of us who do know them, we know that they really lived every moment of their lives thinking, how could they help the community and those around them?
Well, Ferris, you traveled to the Turkish-Syrian border to help the dental clinic that your brother was raising money for. Tell us about that trip. You had one particular interaction I think is very telling.
Yeah, to give a little bit of context, my brother had an active crowdfunding site in which he was at $16 of $20,000 in terms of his goal. And the video that kind of was associated with that then went viral after his death, and it was something along the lines of, hey, have you ever wanted to help a Syrian refugee? So we had about $500,000 to deal with, and thank you to everybody who supported that. And we put $450,000 of that toward an endowment, and the $50,000 we put toward the trip. And yes, halfway through the trip, in the evening, we were coming down, and these kids just, like, you know, their energy was electric. They were just so happy, almost impossibly happy. We just got done, you know, 4 days of treating nothing but orphan after orphan after orphan. And, you know, I broke down, you know, kind of reflecting on my brother and Yusuf and Razan and how they should have been here. And just as a humanity, how we've let this, like, situation develop so far in terms of, like, having people having to leave their home, and then they're out here in the middle of nowhere and nobody wants them. And it's just like, it was just too much to handle. And I just maybe then reflected, you know, what am I doing with my life?
And I'm going to pause right there and come back to this story and continue our conversation with Yusuf Abu Salah and Ferris Barakat. Yusuf is the brother of Yusuf and Rasan Abu Salah. Ferris, the brother of Dia Barakat. We're going to continue our conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking today with Yusuf Abu Salah, who is Yusuf and Rasan's brother. Rasan and Yusuf Abu Salah were killed 1 year ago today, along with Dia Barakat. His brother is with us as well, Ferris Barakat, today on the one-year anniversary of those killings in Chapel Hill. Ferris, before the break, you were talking about the dental clinic that your brother had envisioned. He began raising money, crowdsourcing some funding. You continued that project and then went and visited the dental clinic that's now, you know, up and running on the Turkish-Syrian border for Syrian refugees. Maybe you can recap for us what it was you were feeling and seeing in this moment that you were there.
Sure. You know, that project called Project Refugee Smile had about 40 volunteers and 15 dentists go. And, you know, I didn't really have a place in dental work. I kind of ended up being like the child psychologist almost. They tell me, you know, this child is having a little bit of trouble. Would you kind of speak to him or her and ease them into the dentist chair? I don't even want to go to a dentist on a good day. You know, there's this one story of this kid. We asked him, you know, to kind of ease him along. Do you want a ball? What can we do? He's like, no, he wants a gun. We were like, what? You want a what? I want a gun. And we go to his mom, like, you know, this is unacceptable. You can't teach this kid this. And she's like, absolutely not. We don't teach him this. And actually, I don't even think it was his mom. I think it was his aunt, because he was an orphan. And, you know, he said that as a kid, not too long ago, someone entered their house and shot their father point blank in front of him. And since then was wanting revenge. And you can imagine what a kid's like without having his father. And I just wonder if, like, his whole life is going to be revenge, yeah, or if we can kind of get over that.
Well, I mean, the idea that you were hoping to get over that, given your situation where plenty of people would give you the right to feel vengeful and angry about what mm-hmm. happened to you in ways that you have a right to interpret. Mm-hmm. Your first response was, well, how do we eliminate this kind of feeling from mm-hmm. the world?
You know, I reflected how three people have been able to kind of have an impact across the world. And, you know, 10 times that many have been killed to gun violence here in Durham, 100,000 times that many have been killed in Syria due to that violence. And it's like, you know, 300,000 versus three. I kind of used that story for one of these girls. I told her, well, you know, my brother was killed too. She was timid. I tried to open up to her so she can open up to me. I pulled up Google Maps. I showed her, well, this is where you are, right? This is the rest of the world. There's more out there. And maybe she remembers that. I'm not sure. Also kind of offered her some food, and she readily accepted. And it's like Arab culture to say no like 10 times before you say yes. But when she said yes the first time, like, I was taken aback. I was like, sure, here. 2 days later, I recognized that, maybe that was just a sign that she was actually hungry too. And I felt stupid. I felt like, Ferris, like, you really should have caught on to that a lot quicker and done more for her.
Youssef, let me ask you, how should we see this? What should we take away from this story? And how do you see yourself dealing with this sort of in a public sphere going forward?
So I think there's a few things to take away from this story. I think Diya, Yasser, and Razan were the embodiment of the Muslim American identity. Just last week, Mr. President Obama visited a mosque in Baltimore where he told everyone there, he said, you are Muslim and American. You know, you don't have to choose between the two. You are both. And that's the reason why we're here in this wonderful land, is because of the freedoms that we are allowed, the freedoms that people suffered and fought for. And so what I would like people to take out of this is that we are Muslim Americans. We are here. We have a voice. We are moderate. We are the majority of Muslims. And unfortunately, the Muslims that are getting, you know, the airtime and giving us such a bad reputation and even being portrayed in Hollywood, that's not who we are and that's not what we're like. And so I would hope if Yusuf Razan and Diya could continue to be that light and that inspiration and that portrayal of us. And if we are able to emulate them and continue moving forward, we can make more advancements and strides here in our home.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the program today, Youssef Abousaleh and Ferris Barakat. Youssef is the brother of Yusor and Razan Abousaleh. Ferris, the brother of Diya Barakat. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
And along the lines that you were just talking about, Youssef, we will end this segment with the words of Yusor Abousaleh in a StoryCorps interview recorded in 2014. Let's listen to her.
Growing up in America has been such a blessing. And, you know, although in some ways I do stand out, such
yes.
as, you know, the hijab I wear on my head,
yes.
the head covering, there are still so many ways that I feel so embedded in the fabric that is, you know, our culture. And
Absolutely.
That's the beautiful thing here, is that it doesn't matter where you come from. There's so many different people from so many different places and of different backgrounds and religions.
Absolutely.
But here we're all one culture. And
exactly.
And it's beautiful to see people of, you know, different areas interacting and being family, being, you know, one community.